Smooches, we're going to tell you right now, you better get your headphones on if you don't have them already, and you better get your wallet, or put your wallet as far away as possible. Put it in the freezer, put it under lock and key, because we're talking with Courtney Clark Michaels and Eve Dangerfield, authors respectively from New Zealand and Australia and friends of the podcast, about books where the heroines are really bringing it, when they're really serving See You Next Tuesday. And we get into what it means to serve See You Next Tuesday, what our interpretations are, why these heroines are so badass. And you're going to want some of these books. So really look at your financial situation before you listen to this episode. Wallet out, wallet in. Make the decision now, and we're going to get into it in 3, 2, 1. Hi, Meg.
Hi, Liz.
We have two absolute fucking titans on this transcontinental episode.
An embarrassment of riches.
No bitches are doing it the way they are doing it.
Just a fucking embarrassment.
As soon as you said it, and like we both just started pissing ourselves with laughter.
Yeah, speaking only about myself here.
We are here with our friends of the podcast, Courtney Clark Michaels from New Zealand and Eve Dangerfield from Australia. And somehow we've made this work without the technology completely shitting the bed.
It's our first time ever with
amazing
technology not shitting the bed.
So we are gathered here today,
transcontinental,
to worship at the altar of cuntiness and talk about what makes a heroine cunty. What does it mean to serve cunt? So I wanted to share where I first heard this phrase, because I'm not cool, I'm not hip, so I'm going to share my screen and let you know. I first learned about the phrase serving cunt when the Try Guys, really, who I don't watch or follow, but it was inescapable, the Try Guys scandal of Ned, what's his face, stepping out on his wife.
Yeah.
And the Try Guys did a white couch, neutral background, not apology video, but explanation video about the steps they took as a company. And
is he the one in the middle, the cheater?
No.
He's not in the image, right?
He's not in, the cheater is not in the image. So
there were four,
and
now there are three.
Those three guys being like, guys, monogamy doesn't always work.
So this is after, right. And I'll share this video, or I'll share this photo. But there were a lot of tweets to the effect of, the two other guys look like they're going to cry, but Eugene on the end of the couch is just serving cunt.
That was my first thought. I'm like, this motherfucker is not sorry at all. He is pissed they have to do this.
He's like, fuck this guy. Fuck him for fucking with my money, with my friend, his wife. Like, he's dead to me. And Eugene came with this, like, V-neck, like, tailored to the gods.
Yeah, he's cinched.
Yes. Just, and the other two look like they have not,
they're just dudes.
In days. So
it looks like they've escaped some sort of programming conference to be here.
Yeah. When people say all white guys look the same, like, you gotta really give it to people. Like, you're just there, like, there are like three white guys, and like they are like they're the only
three white guy archetypes.
Yeah. It's like Mr. Potato Head. There's only so many different ways that you can do Mr. Potato Head.
Take off the one kind of hair and put on the other kind of
right.
hair.
No lies detected.
And there's the one also, with no like hair. That's how you Twitter identify.
Account was dog with a blog. There's dog with a blog Twitter account. Like.
So serving cunt is, it originates as drag slang. It's giving, Urban Dictionary says, pussy power. Anyone of any gender can serve cunt. It's about boldness and confidence and just owning who you are and being a bad bitch.
Mm-hmm. I first heard it from you.
Mm-hmm.
You're spreading the good news.
I am.
The gospel according to Mother.
But then I still had to Google it.
It's the first time Americans have ever been able to say the word cunt without looking like they want to cry, like, or yeah, like sounding really like, because you guys are the worst, like you have the worst accent, like cunt, like it's really it's somehow more hostile. Like I can be like, oh yeah, and then I was talking to this cunt and he was like fucking, like you just kind of Australians and Kiwis and British people, we can just say cunt and it's not a big deal. With Americans, it's just like, it's very nasty, like male mm-hmm. and female. Like,
is it the hard T?
It's that cunt? It doesn't mean, like, to us is like, yeah. Oh, you know, like you could say, oh, good cunt, like he's a good cunt, like, oh, I was talking to this dickhead. Like it's whereas for you guys, you mean like a woman who is a bitch. Like mm-hmm. that is what cunt means in your culture. Like it doesn't mean anything else. Like you can't call someone a silly cunt, like in America in particular. So it's like that is what men call you when you yell at them for grabbing your ass. You know, mm-hmm. like this crazy. So that's the only context, like, you know, so it's like, it's nice that you guys are bringing in like more cunt vernacular into your language.
Because you wrote about it, Eve, and I think it was a Captivated.
Yeah, it was Captivated.
Because
yeah,
she calls him a good cunt, which by the way, I've been called by students. That's how common they're like, Mrs. Such a GC. And I'm like, bro, I know what
a GC.
Like, call me something else, please.
You're like, thanks, 9-year-old.
Yeah, 17-year-old.
No,
you wrote about it in Captivated, how she calls, I think, Blake, she calls him a good cunt, and then she gets all like, oh, whoops, sorry, I forget that you Americans are, like, really weird about that.
Yeah, I was like, I think it was because I was in, like, a group chat, like, not a group chat, I was doing, like, a podcast or some kind of public event, like on the internet back in like 2017, and then like someone was mentioning someone who's controversial, and my thing is like, look, I just think the guy's a cunt, and like you could just see like the looks on everyone's faces. Like it was probably the first time they'd ever seen a woman say cunt like that way, and I was just like, nah, fuck, like it was just very like, I think that's very based in my experience, which is like I say it all the time, I don't realize, like it's just part of how I talk.
I say it a lot, but not in front of my mum. My mum takes it real hard.
Yeah.
I'll say it in front of my dad, but not in front of my mum.
Yeah, I can't even say fuck in front of my mum. She would get upset. She'd be like, Alex.
I remember the first time I ever said it was maybe like 21 in college. I went to a showing of the Vagina Monologues, and they have like a scene or whatever that's called Reclaiming Cunt, and like the whole crowd was supposed to chant like cunt, 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 and everyone was like, are we saying this?
So it was very called out. Oh, can I tell, like, I have one other funny story, which mm-hmm. is that in primary school, me and my best friends were standing around being like, you know, because the worst word is fuck. Like, you know, you're like fucking 11 and you're like, yeah, swear words. No one can stop you from saying them. Like, and then we were just like, yeah, so fuck's like the worst one. And then our friend Brittany Paterno was just like, no, it isn't. And we're like, what's worse? So there's no other worse swear word, but we had literally never heard the word. She's like, it's cunt. And we were like, when you hear it for the first time, you're like, that doesn't mean anything to me. So we're just like, cunt, cunt, like walking around being like, what a crazy word. Like, it's so bad we haven't even heard it yet mm-hmm. in our environment. So I was like, just all of us being like, fuck's definitely the worst one, you know? Like,
because when I first heard it, I was repeating something that someone had told me, but in front of my parents.
Oh,
I was
no.
like, oh, no, Anna says he's a total cunt.
Yeah, oh,
like,
no.
14.
Oh, no.
Just time stopped.
Oh my gosh. So Liz, do you think that cuntiness or like being cunty is a synonym to serving cunt? Are those the same thing?
I think it can be. Courtney's shaking her head no. I think the way that I see it in internet parlance is like someone's like doing something cool and cunty. But Courtney, you're shaking your head no. Why?
I am, because I think that you can be a cunt without serving cunt.
Yes.
Mm-hmm. And I think you can serve cunt without being a cunt.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
Yeah, so in that sense, you're right. They're not synonymous, but you can, like, cuntiness can be positive or negative, and you can serve cunt without being a cunt.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
So we are all about positive cuntiness.
Yes.
Observation.
This is all, like, so we are talking about heroines who are cunty celebratory. Like, we admire.
We're cunt positive.
Yes.
Yeah. We're not saying they're cunts. We're saying they're serving cunt.
Mm-hmm. They might also be cunt, but yeah, it's not necessarily.
Yeah. It's not.
But I mean, we already inclusive. Do that with bitchiness. Like, you can say someone's a bad bitch, but if I say she's a bitch, you know what I mean.
Yeah,
like,
exactly.
Yeah. You can, yeah, you can be both. You could be either.
So I would like to share my first heroine who is serving cunt, and that is in Diana Quincy's The Viscount Made Me Do It.
Ooh, and
are you having a historical moment?
I'm not, though. Two of my picks are.
Okay.
Yeah, I don't know. But Diana Quincy, I started reading her because I found out that she's a Palestinian romance author, and I didn't know of a Palestinian romance author. So I immediately had to figure out what she wrote about. And in this book, the heroine is a bone setter, which I think you could compare to like a chiropractor or an osteopath, but she is, her profession is regarded as quackery in this book, which is kind of funny reading this now in the age of TikTok when you do see quack chiropractors who think that you can like cure cancer by cracking someone's neck.
Yes. And that if your spine was actually out of alignment, you'd be in a wheelchair. Like that's not a thing.
But she does help people with like injuries that have to do with bones and deal with pain. So like modern day understanding of like quackery aside, it's presented as like, you know, it is folk medicine that was passed down to her and she knows what she's doing. And she starts the book out by being called to like a bar or something where someone says that they have dislocated their wrist, but they're really just like trying to make a fool of her and trying to show that she's just like doesn't know what she's talking about. So he's not really injured.
She breaks the wrist.
Yeah, she does. No, she really does. She dislocates his. She's like, your wrist isn't dislocated. And then she dislocates it and says, now it is. So if you want me to pop it back in, come by later.
So, this is why she's on your list. And I love her.
Does violate the Hippocratic Oath, but does so while serving cunt.
And in fairness, you wasted her time. Like,
She is so focused on her business and not settling for just like a nice Arab man, like all of these matches who her grandmother and mother try to set her up with because she doesn't want to get married and be forced to stop practicing bone setting. And she just is no nonsense and not riled by anything. She is like so professional with the guy who was the hero of the novel, who she treats for his injury, but there's also like a murder mystery woven in because his parents were killed years ago, and when he first sees her, she's wearing a very distinctive necklace that he realizes belonged to his mother. So he goes to see her at first to try to figure out why she has this necklace. But she, like, is not... She's thirsting over this man while he's, like, shirtless on her table. But she's like, I'm not going to show it because I am a seasoned professional and I am doing a job. And also, she, like, provides her services.
I'm going to go in multiple regards here. Like,
yes.
The ethics are questionable.
Questionable ethics, yes. But the cuntiness cannot
maybe
be denied.
Maybe that's part. Yeah, like, the cuntiness supersedes any ethical codes.
Yeah.
Yeah.
She balances it out by providing very affordable services.
This one's set, but, like, ethics were a bit wibbly-wobbly there.
Yeah.
Historically.
Yeah.
Absolutely.
Still a bit wibbly wobbly, if we're being honest.
So she's my first one. Who wants to go next?
Oh, no.
I will. You didn't have to teach no one else is volunteering.
You yeah. threw it out to the class and everyone was like, not me.
So I am starting with Robin from Perv by Dakota Gray. So Dakota Gray is the slightly filthier pen name for Melissa Blue. And Perv is written, I think, exclusively from the male perspective, actually, which makes it different. And it's about a dude who, can't remember if it's exclusively or if it's Jill, but it's first person, and it's from a guy who's like mad passion in life is eating pussy.
Love that.
That is his end game. Sex is like whatever, but
so does the heroine serve cunts that he then eats? She's serving the cunt for him to eat.
She sure is, and she does not wait long to do it, which I respect either as well.
Why waste time?
So it turns out there's a bit of a backstory with him having hurt one of her friends in the past. And so she really finds herself struggling with a bit of a moral dilemma there.
Did he bite her?
And she is not nice to him. You know, she doesn't like him. You know, she's happy enough for him to like stay down there and have an all-you-can-eat buffet. But in no way does she like him as a person. And she has very little respect for him and makes it well known. So I like that. She was the first heroine I think I saw called unlikable in reviews and stuff. And so I'm 100% here for her.
There's an episode of Sex and the City where there's like this legendary man roaming the dating scene of New York, and they call him the Mouth. And and Charlotte gets a hold of him, and she doesn't want to like release him back into the dating ecosystem. And some women have to be like, no, he's not for keeping. You let him rotate.
Yeah.
But if anyone on that show needed pussy whispering on call, it was Charlotte.
Yeah, she always seemed to like develop compulsive. Like she was also the one who got the rabbit habit,
right?
Yeah, and I feel like it's so in keeping with her character that she's like, I can't just enjoy the sex; I have to marry this guy. And yeah. Everyone's just like, you don't have anything in common. Like, stop being weird.
Yeah, Charlotte. She tries to have a conversation with the mouth,
yeah,
and it
she's
does
like
not
trying to
go.
And he keeps suggestively eating stuff instead of talking to her.
Like the camera's like really zoomed in, and he's like eating fruit.
Oh, talking about it makes me a little bit sick still. Like,
oh, that's a good episode.
All right, who's next?
I'll go. My number one here is Sasha Finnerty from Hot Under His Collar by Andy J. Christopher.
Bad bitch.
Feel like all that needs to be said is that she took a man from the priesthood by the sheer power that she has going on.
Mm-hmm.
Right? I mean, like, that's tops. He was having some
literally
doubts.
Nothing better than making a man break his vow to God.
Yeah.
Top tier cuntiness.
Yeah. Now that said, I have not read Priest by Sierra Simone.
It is, and that's some more strong cunt energy.
Yeah. Yeah. Maybe that should be next on my list.
I mean, you like Tiffany Rice, so you could read The Siren, which also has a priest.
Mm-hmm. Is that before The Rose?
It's separate series. Oh, it's okay. The first in a series, and like her longest series.
Like I have been cheated by the priests in real life I have met.
Yeah.
when I listen to this list of books.
Yeah, I spent too much time in church as a kid to find that remotely sexy. I'm just like, you can't really go back there. Fuck you.
I'm like, never have I seen a priest that I would be vaguely interested in having at my altar.
Yeah. Yeah. I also think like I'm a total agnostic, and I swear I don't go up to people and like try to like debate their religious views, but like I'm just like, come on, man, none of this is real. Just like stop. Like that's enough. Like, you know, in my POV, like I'm just like, oh, whatever.
Just remembering the time that Father Patrick like basically waterboarded my kid during baptism.
Oh no.
I'm more likely to punch a priest than fuck one.
Oh. Oh.
Buttering out his tiny little nose.
Oh, horrible. Yeah, I mean, it's one of those things where it's like I'm enjoying it in the book, but it's not something that I'm seeking in my real life.
It's not your ministry.
No.
Oh. Nice. Yeah. And Andrew J does such good, like, cunty heroines. I think I always love the characters. They're always older. They have some, like, grit. Like, you know, they're not the kind of typical romance heroine in the sense that they're really naive. They're very kind of battle-hardened, and I really like that in a heroine.
Mm-hmm. There's a real relatability to Andy's heroines that I love.
Yeah, totally.
Eve, what do you have for us?
I thought my first one would be the first ever romance heroine that I thought was like cunty, which is It's After Hours by Cara McKenna. The heroine is a registered nurse. I'll never stop singing the praises of Cara McKenna, who vanishing off the romance landscape will always be like a bit of a, you know, pour one out situation for me. Mm-hmm. But Erin Coffey, the heroine, she meets this guy at work. He's like an orderly, and like he's like restrains all the really dangerous patients. And she was the first woman where like he came gunning for her really hard, and she was like, fuck off, like I'm here to work, I'm here to save money, like I have plans, I'm supporting my sister, go away. And it was like, I think I was like 21 when I read that novel, and like the idea that like you could say that to someone was still like very novel and new. Mm-hmm. Like the idea that, you know, this really hot, like even if you are attracted to someone, that you'd be like, no, I have other priorities, fuck you. And the guy's like, I love it when you tell me no. Like it was just it was nice to see that represented in romance, because I think that is very true. I think like a lot of men have a lot of respect for women who like state their boundaries and say what they want. So it's like it was nice to kind of see that reflected in romance, whereas usually it's the more typical power dynamic of like he's pursuing and she's just like, oh, you know, like, and it's more circumstances that keep them apart rather than her articulating that she's not ready or she doesn't want to be with him. Mm-hmm. So yes, and it was like she just
a little bit of like an Antipodean thing.
Yeah, I do. The men here,
because we don't have a dating culture way that America does.
That's exactly what I was, and like my partner who's a Kiwi is always just like, New Zealanders are even worse than Australians, which I didn't think was possible in terms of if you took alcohol away, the population would crater, like of just being able to actually approach people you're attracted to or like have any kind of conversation.
That's it. Yeah. And I just like, so alcohol is not just our social lubricant, it's literally the glue that holds our country together, that keeps us procreating. Yeah. And we have, because we don't have a dating culture, we have a very strong hookup culture. Like if you go home with someone 3 weekends in a row, that's kind of just you're in a relationship and you just fall into it.
Mm-hmm.
But it has to be in a row. Yeah. Otherwise you can sleep with the same person for a decade every few months. And that's just friends with Benes.
Yes, exactly. And you have to start to articulate what you want very quickly, or at least I did, because I was just like, we're wasting time here. Someone needs to do something. And it's like, but it is like coming from an Italian culture where men approach you, or, you know, everyone is so much better at socializing. We never drank at gatherings when I was little. And my family, you know, we dance and we talk. And then you go out with like, you go out to an Anglo party and it's just like, you'd think these people have never fucking met each other before. Like, how are people so fucking awkward? Like, it's just, it's ridiculous. I do think it's cultural. Yeah, you have to
go. The first time I went to the States, I had, firstly, one of the hottest guys I've ever seen in my life ask me out. And I like, said no and avoided him because I had never been asked out.
Yes.
I was 20, so I assumed that he was going to kidnap me and make a skin suit from me.
Yeah, well, he was making fun of you. I thought a guy was, when I went to America, I thought a guy was making fun of me. Like, he was like, oh, I love your shoes. And I was like, fuck off. Like, what are you doing? Fuck you.
Yeah. He'd be like, you're beautiful. And I'm like, get the fuck away.
Yeah, I know where this is going. Like, all your mates are going to, like, be around the corner and, like, throw water balloons at me or something. Like, fuck you. Nice try. Like,
yeah, we went to, like, a party. And I said to my friend Rachel, who's American, who took me to the party, I was like, mate, I've not been hit on once. And she's like, mate.
Yeah.
She loves it a little bit, so she could say that. she's like, because people had not got drunk and grabbed at my body parts or asked me, like, straight up, do you want to fuck? Like, verbatim. I assume that every single person there found me, like, hideously unattractive because that's how things happen where I'm from.
I have so many questions.
This is total news to me.
Absolutely shocked and horrified.
What you're describing is kind of what, like, I, a child bride, think dating is like for my peers. But I don't think that it's quite so, like, hey, you want to fuck?
Okay.
Because there is, like, a, hey, do you want to go out sometime? And then fuck.
You want to hear the worst ever pickup line that worked on me?
Yes.
Yeah.
Yes. Yeah. Yeah.
The only reason I am safe to do this is because I know my husband will never listen to this podcast. But someone approached me in a bar, looked me up and down, and said, get your shit, we're leaving.
If they're hot, that's hot. Like, that's kind of sexy.
I was just like, they're like, balls on it. Yeah, you get on board.
Do you want to? I have, like, very similar, and it was a Kiwi as well. It was a Kiwi bloke. And
did,
like,
you fuck the same guy?
Maybe. I don't know. We'll circle back to that. But he was like, and, like, you can edit this out if it's too gross, but, like, he, like, put a finger down my top and, like, pulled me closer and was like, do you want me to root you, Alex? And I was just like, oh, yes. But he said root. Like, to clarify, like, root you is, like, something from, to me, like, the 80s, the 70s.
Yeah,
like,
that's what the dads and uncles say.
Yeah, this was like 2021. So,
what,
like,
does it mean?
It means fuck. Like, it means, okay. But you can also say, like, do you want to root? And I feel bad because, like, don't think this is part of, like, everyday Australian lexicon, because it's not. Mm-hmm. It's like a very.
I think it is.
Like, yeah, but you're from New Zealand, and New Zealand is like 30 years in the past. Like, oh no, this is too. I love New Zealand. My partner's from New Zealand. Like, I love New Zealand dearly, but, like, he's still on Facebook. He calls reels Facebook reels. And I was like, what the fuck are you talking about? Why are you still using Facebook as an app? Stop it. Yes.
Oh my gosh. Wow. This was very educational.
Yes.
New Zealand and Australia are basically like this. There's some tension, but when you're overseas, it's you against everyone else.
Yes, you know? That is very true. I will always all I was going to say was, like, the only thing I realized during the pandemic, because, again, my partner Kiwi was living with me, that, like, New Zealand was shit-talking Australia the entire time. Like, every day their headline news would be like, Australia's fucking up again with COVID. And I was like, yeah, but we're just ignoring you. We're over there shit-talking us, and we're just, like, we don't care because we're ignoring you. It's a classic older brother situation.
That is exactly what it is. I always describe Australia as, like, it's like the slightly more racist drunk uncle.
Oh, totally more racist. Oh, completely.
Yeah, like it's, you know, like you don't really want to hang out with them that much, but if someone else comes to them, that's your fucking family.
Yes, exactly. And I think New Zealand's the better. Sorry, I'm so sorry, guys. You've been
relegated. No, it's okay.
We've gone well off topic.
About our cultural differences.
This is fascinating.
Yeah, New Zealand's the best, and you have some really hot guys. Like, fuck. Like, really hot guys in New Zealand.
You have really hot guys too. As long as they don't talk,
yeah, there's that. Yeah, that's a very good point. All right.
Do either of you want to sponsor our visas so we can get the fuck out of here?
Yes.
I mean,
yes.
Technically, Eve can marry one of you.
Hey, I'll marry both of you.
It's not that serious with me and my husband.
Yeah.
10-month-old child.
Yeah, your infant.
But you must realize that if you come over here, you'll just have random guys being like, do you want a roach?
I'm like, walking like, down the street. No, thank you.
Yeah.
So,
yeah, but I told you. Boundaries. We really enjoy boundaries in our heroines.
Speaking of boundaries.
Because we apparently have none ourselves.
So, my next pick, if you are a good Christian girl, like I used to be, you might ask yourself, How do you serve cunt in a God honoring way?
Much.
And never ask myself.
And the answer to that is the heroine of Laura Kinsale's Flowers from the Storm, this gigantic brick of a book. Her name is Maddie. She's a Quaker. She meets this Duke who is a mathematician, and her father's a mathematician. So she couriers papers between the two of them. They go to a conference, all three of them together. She doesn't like the Duke because, you know, he's a rake and she's a good Quaker. So she's just like very like appalled by this worldly man. And then she's actually charmed by him and by how nice he is to her father. And the next day she goes to give him a thank you note and finds
There's
out that he has died.
Outside.
Yeah. Except he hasn't actually died. He's had a stroke and he gets put into a mental asylum because they don't know what a stroke is. Back then, they just like see that
Go where I thought it was going.
Yeah. Oh, none
this
of this
book is
yeah.
turn here.
That's the Listen, story of this whole book.
This book is a 548 pages.
That's a tome.
Some of this is excerpts from other books. It's over 500 pages, and I always say like it deserves every page. I wouldn't cut a single page out of this. But Maddie is she truly fears no one but God. Like she does not give a single solitary fuck what anyone thinks about her, including her church. And that is something that she comes to terms with because she realizes that she does not care what anyone thinks about her. She feels this calling to help this man and show like, no, he is not crazy. He is in need of like care. Like that's why he can no longer speak. He's trying to communicate. He's there. He just can't like get the words out. So she becomes this man's advocate while not taking a single moment of his shit. And one of my favorite things about this is Maddie, in a nutshell, is someone who will not bow to the king because it's blasphemous. And she's just like, she presents it one way as like, no, well, it's because of my faith. I can't like bow to a man as if he has power over me. But the way that it comes off is she is serving cunt.
That book is amazing.
Incredible.
It is so good. It is just like high drama and so beautiful and just like one of the best love stories I've ever read. And I would have never expected a 500 something page historical about a Quaker and a Duke who has trouble communicating because of a stroke.
They came out in 1992.
Can we talk about this author photo? This woman is wearing a beret. In her author photo. She is serving cunt in this author photo.
She is.
All right, Courtney.
Okay, so my second one is Monroe from Broderick by Katie Robert. And it's part of the Sabine Valley series, which is on hold indefinitely at the moment,
I didn't realize she was still working on that.
Well, indefinite hold, she's not.
Okay.
But Broderick is the second book in the series, and the premise is that the seven Payne brothers have been banished from their region, which is divided into three factions. And they come home and literally challenge through Fight Club the right to take brides, brides can be any gender, any sexuality, from other factions in order to secure allegiance. So they've been banished and they've come back for revenge. And part of their revenge is taking brides from the different factions, which is supposed to establish peace for the year-long period that the marriage is honored. And after that, they can all go back to what they do, which is mostly killing each other. So
of course,
Broderick is the second brother. It's the second book in the series. It's the last book in the series so far. And he is in love with his best friend, Shiloh, who is also in love with him, but he is forced to take a bride as part of his brother's overarching plan, and he ends up with Monroe, who is the she is the heir to the Amazon faction, and she is amazing. So the first thing she does when she is very unwillingly entered into this marriage pact with Roderick is work out that he is in love with Shiloh and immediately begin fucking Shiloh.
Nice.
Add to and, cart.
And so she and Shiloh begin a relationship which drives Roderick fucking mental. Like, he's having sex with Monroe because he has to, like, the marriage has to be consummated in order for it to be valid. And he's very sexually attracted to her, but he hates her as a human being. She also is not a huge fan of him, but she's really enjoying how bothered he is by this scenario. So she's just like, just poking at his bruise every chance that she gets, to the point where he walks in on them and is told to, like, get the fuck out. We're busy without you. And what I really like about Monroe's current, like, character development is that when we start to see her develop feeling for Shiloh, her solution to this bothersome little dynamic that's happening is for just everyone to fuck. All of us. Let's do it together. And Broderick and Shiloh are too much of pussies to announce, like, to own their feelings. So she kind of manipulates them into using her as the lightning rod for their own attraction. So I really enjoy, she obviously has, like, a powerful role in the community. So she serves cunt in, like, her day-to-day work life. And then she comes home and she just is the little cornerstone for this fucked up, but really underneath it all, quite tender relationship scenario. And I love that she uses her powers for evil, and that those evil powers actually end up being for good in the end.
Wow, that sounds amazing.
It does.
Amazing. Highly recommend.
I just sent the same. I literally just sent the sample to my Kindle.
Yeah,
I was like, this for me, just write it down.
Meg, what have you got next?
So my
do you want to do both of them?
I will do both of them. So I'm talking about the book Mistakes Were Made by Meryl Wilsner.
That is on my TBR.
It is good. You should keep it on there.
Moving it on up.
Yeah, we have a character named Erin Bennett. She is a emergency room doctor and somewhat recently divorced, became a mom very young, but she's like a MILF. And she comes to her daughter's parents' weekend at college, and she knows that her ex-husband is going to be there. She doesn't have, like, any lingering romantic feelings for him, but she is annoyed by him and doesn't want to be in his presence. So she goes to a bar on the other side of town and picks up a young lady who's very interested in her. They hook up in the bar bathroom, and then they go to her car and hook up there. And then the young lady's like, hey, can you take me home? And Aaron's like, sure. And she's like, cool, I'm in the dorm on the college campus. And Aaron's like, shit. The young lady is Cassie Klein. She is a senior in college, and Aaron's daughter is a freshman. But it turns out when they...
Oh, no, you froze. What's happening?
Yeah, now you're frozen.
Okay.
Are you good?
Yeah. Okay. I can hear you all.
Okay.
You're frozen shock at this plot twist.
Yeah. Yeah, that's her daughter's best friend. Oh, no. So they're at this, like, family breakfast together, pretending they don't know each other. And this was just a hookup, but they're both, like, pretty much U-hauling it immediately. Like, they're obsessed with each other. So then Aaron's daughter, invites Cassie over to their house to stay with them for winter break. And so basically the whole time they're like secretly having sex while her daughter is like sleeping in late and stuff. So it comes to a head when they're like hooking up in her kitchen at one point, and the ex-husband just like lets himself in the house and walks in and catches them. And it is very dicey for a minute there, but of course everything ends well. But Cassie is like, she's very young but like very confident, and she's definitely got more of like a masculine energy, and she's like, Aaron, this doesn't have to be a big deal. Like, you're into me, I'm into you, let's just do this. It's like this sort of confidence that inspires Aaron, and then Aaron's just like a MILF, so they're
that's
both serving
for me.
Confidence,
so they're like, that's,
yeah, right.
Did we not all feel that way at 22 before life?
Yeah. So it's excellent. 10 out of 10, recommend. They're both serving cunt.
I'm so intrigued. Can I just say, mm-hmm. it's surprising how many of these heroines serving cunt are in the medical industry. That sounds good.
That is interesting.
Very interesting. Huh. I have to double check. I feel like my heroine might be studying to be in the medical industry as well, the next one. But anyway, did you have another one, Meg?
Nope, those were my two. I'm done.
Shit. All right. Well, let me just quickly Google so that I can see if I can't remember if she's studying. But my heroine was Kiki Banjo from Honey and Spice by Baloo Babalola. I read this book in an airport, I think last year, and it was just really beautiful and really ballsy. Like, it had a lot to say, not just about the specific romance, but about romance in general. And it's like set at a university, so there's a lot of academia, and there was like really interesting discussions of like how women are often encouraged to kind of not outshine men, and that you're also encouraged to invest way more time and energy in men than men deserve, that, you know, that women kind of act like men are deserving of our time and attention. And usually they're not. Like, they're not as funny as your mates. They're not as smart as your friends. They're not as tough as your mum. Like, you know, it's just, I think that's one of the big problems of patriarchy, is that all men are sort of meant to be above us, when the reality that you feel in your bones is that I could fucking beat up all of these dudes with my mind. Yeah, you know what I mean? Like, that was the thing that really came through in Honey and Spice. And that's the beauty of the romance, because it is a man who she feels is worthy of that trust and the dedication, and who she doesn't feel is speaking down to her or trying to kind of manipulate her in a way. And I always think that with the best cunty people, they're like cunty, but it's because they have a really warm heart. I think that's the difference between being a cunt. Like, if you're a cunt, like, you're not self-aware, you just walk around, you know, it's like, it's Karen energy, basically. Like,
you've nailed it. The difference between being a cunt and being a cunt.
The very typical vernacular of like, you're a cunt, which is like, if we're allowed to have toxic masculinity, toxic femininity, to me is kind of like where you live in that feminine world where it's like, I shouldn't have to take responsibility for anything. I couldn't possibly be being an asshole. And that is something women do have to take responsibility for, that sometimes we can tend to be like, oh, well, if I didn't mean it, then how can I have hurt your feelings? Mm. Whereas I feel like serving cunt is about being self-assured and being bossy and being like, but then beneath all of that, you have a very tender heart and you're very invested in how other people feel and how their feelings affect you. So
I think
I'll give
a very self-aware confidence as opposed to being a cunt, which is undeserved confidence, perhaps ignorant confidence.
Yeah, and it's delusional as well. Like, and it relies on kind of racing to the bottom of being the biggest victim and then being like, oh, you know, like, whereas serving cunt is about being aggressive in an active way. But I had one of the quotes from Honey and Spice that I really liked, which was, romance was a waste of time, a form of manipulation utilized by boys who didn't wash their bed sheets regularly. It existed, sure, but I wasn't surrounded by anyone I believed engaged in it properly, with the respect for the object of their affection rather than a thirst to claim, a triumph of acquisition rather than a triumph of winning affection. So, like, the whole book is just riddled. I I know, it's just riddled. It's like really powerful. And I feel like it made me feel like this was written by someone who has a lot to say and who has seen a lot. And it made me feel like a better person for having read it. Like it made me feel like I'd expanded. So anyway, that's my pick for number two.
This episode's getting expensive.
Oh no, I'm sorry.
No, it's okay.
Out. Oh no, I thought you meant we were running out of the free Zoom trial.
Like, oh no, no, no.
Oh no, dude.
No, I pay for this shit.
This is add to cart expensive.
Yeah, this is add to cart expensive. Okay, so my last one is one that I read years ago, so I'm going to be skimpy on the plot details, but it's A Gentleman in the Street by Alicia Rye, and this was written in 2014, so we weren't as aware of there not being ethical billionaires as we are now, but it was the era of like, well, if it's a female billionaire, then that's like a little bit different. So the heroine is a billionaire. Her name is Akira. She throws fabulous orgies, and all she wants in the world other than to have a successful business and resolve her mommy and daddy issues is to fuck her ex-stepbrother.
All right.
Can I just take a moment to say that I already love Alicia Rye,
mm-hmm.
and this synopsis has done nothing to impact that.
Yeah.
It has possibly amplified my love.
If you have read Alicia Rye's more recent trad pub titles, which are great, this is a much like smuttier, filthier Alicia Rye. Like there's threesomes. I'm pretty sure that there's like group anal in this, if I'm recalling correctly. There's nipple clamps. There's like sex performances. And the whole premise of the book is that she is this very sex positive, open person, and her ex-stepbrother, who is a writer who seems to put a character based on her in all his books and kind of present her as a cunt versus serving cunt.
Oh.
He's got a real,
we were all so that. Excited and then we all were so disappointed at the same time.
Yeah, but
get a new character. Mm-hmm. Fuck you.
Yeah.
Sorry.
So he's clearly like working through his issues in that way, but they work it out, and he's actually like quite sweet once he gets past his bullshit. And I like the idea of a book where it is the hero who's kind of repressed and naive and innocent in some ways, and the heroine is the one who shows him some things he's never experienced before.
I love how you described her two goals in life, which is like successful business, fucking ex-stepbrother.
Stepbrother!
It's so important to have goals.
And she torments him with how hot she is and just like parading around, making sure that there's one moment where they're at the same event and she sneaks off with another man and makes sure that he sees her and knows that he's going to follow her and catch them in the act, and she just puts on a little show for him.
I feel like in 2014 we also knew a lot less about incels, because like as soon as I hear about like he's a writer and he sits around like on r/nice guys being like like, you know, that I feel like culturally, like that's like a culture thing. Like we didn't know that in 2014. Mm-hmm. We didn't know that, like,
yeah, this is now a red flag. Flag.
Yeah, as soon as I hear male writer, I'm like,
yeah. Like what kind of like strange descriptions of breast movement are we going
she
to
breasted
see?
She breasted breastly into the breast room. She had septuple D's, the biggest boobs anyway.
Her nipples were always erect.
I would like to take a brief moment to just say romantically inclined Kate, she posted something where some absolute ball bag like sent her his own smut, and I was like, you just, it feels like all these men write this off one template. I don't know how they fucking do it, but they all sound the same. And it all sounds like dog shit. I was like, embarrassed? Like, aren't you fucking embarrassed? Like, don't you cry? Like, at how fucking awful your writing is? I would kill myself. Like,
if they're that bad writing about it, you know that they're a terrible lay, too.
Yeah, and you're like, you're writing it one-handed. Okay. You're just like, ugh.
I was just like, the grammar, the tense work, like the, oh my God. It was
you
like,
really
it was
think you're doing tense. Something. Like, you really think you're doing something.
Yeah. He thought he ate.
And then he has the audacity to like message her underneath that after he's cold sent her this pure shit that he thinks passes for smart. She's like, yeah. I heard you like smart. What do you think of this? And she puts it on the internet, and everyone who's ever read a romance book in their life is like, motherfucker, you can't fuck.
And she's so nice. If it was me, I would be like, I think you should put a bag on your head. Like, and then like duck
tape the bottom. I am thinking this is your mother.
Like, that's why guys, like we don't, I'm not trying to big myself up, but guys never send me shit like that. Nothing about my vibe suggests that, like, it would make, like, that it would make my day to, like, try to ruin you psychologically. Like, and it's like, give me a fucking reason. Give me a reason, and I'll come at you with everything I have.
I like to think that, I feel like my social presence is probably a little bit nicer than I am as a person, in general. But I like to think that there's enough there that if someone sent that to me, they would know it was with the absolute certainty that I would emotionally castrate them.
Yeah, yes. Which is like, Kate did cut, like, she is so funny. Like, she is so witty. Oh, like, man. But she's just like, she completely dismantled this guy, but I'm like, I don't think because she posted it on her Instagram, he's just going to be like, that's my writing. Yay. Like, you know what I mean? Like, that's the problem. You have to eviscerate them. Otherwise, they don't understand. You have to go really, really, really hard. Otherwise, they're just like, someone's paying attention to me. I think I heard it described as like, it's the equivalent of like, you're being stoned to death and you're like, everybody's looking at me. Like, oh, you completely fail to understand the context in which people are looking at you as a bad thing. Like,
and that's what the internet has done, is that people feel like any attention is good attention. It's like that old, like, any, like, all press is good press. This is not true. This is the internet. This press will haunt you.
The kid that flips their eyelids inside out and they're like, yay, like, everyone fucking hates me, like that, but like everyone, like, all the time.
The knuckle crackers of life.
Like, that's what we've come to. Like, that's where humanity is gonna end. Like,
just some dude named Chad or Jordan cracking his fucking knuckles and being like, I'm the last bro. Fuck you.
I totally fingered someone, but they live in Queensland, so how will you know? You don't know. You just have to believe me. But you
don't have to fingered anyone. Stadium boyfriend syndrome for men.
Fucking liar.
Meg, we've lost control of our
I'm sorry. Show. I'm so sorry. The other thing is, like, I'm fanning myself. It's summer in Australia. It's like 35 degrees. I think the heat is like, you know, I'm going through it.
No, I have a hand fan that is currently sitting on my Peloton.
Oh, don't you know those killed Mr. Big?
apparently Big deserved it. No, we were just talking about this. Meg, what? Was it you I was talking to? How, like, it was Carrie who killed him out of negligence? She was just, like, crying because he's, like,
yeah, because there's this article that I read. I can't remember where it was now. But they consulted, like, two or three cardiologists, and they're like, no, he could have been saved. Like, he was totally conscious when she came home, and she just, like, half-dragged him into the shower and cried over his still very much alive body.
Instead of calling an ambulance.
Until he died.
She was just trying to get pneumonia in there in case.
I just think that's one of the funniest things ever, is like, you've paid them so much money to have Peloton in the show, and then you see the episode and it's like, but this heavily implies that our bicycles kill people. Uh-oh, sorry. Sorry. like,
well, then he went and did ads for Peloton where they were like making fun of it or whatever, and then all of those allegations about him being horrible came out and they stopped,
and everything just got wiped from the internet.
Yeah.
That, that Chris North doesn't, like, that doesn't surprise me. It's kind of like Russell Brand. It's just like, like, is anybody fucking surprised? Like, they're a cunt. And they're not serving cunt. They are cunts.
They are cunts. Cunts.
Chick cunts, as we call them in Australia. Chick cunts. Chick cunts.
Yeah.
I think Courtney's next. You have one more?
I have one more. So it actually follows on quite nicely from yours, Liz, because it's by Talia Hibbert.
Ooh.
But much like Alicia Rye, I find that Talia Hibbert's independent release, cunts, are serving a far heftier version than her trad.
I want trad publishing to get off our fucking necks.
That's it. So I have a lot of love for the Brown sisters. I do. But they're just, the books just aren't as steamy. The girls just aren't quite as bitchy. And that's why I think her indie backlist is where people should actually start with Talia.
Mm-hmm.
And I will preface this by saying that this book made such an impact on me that when I finished it, I immediately proposed to my boyfriend.
Aww, that's
so
sweet. Well, fuck him.
Yeah.
Oh, we're married now.
I'm glad it all worked out.
It did. But not at the time. And I messaged Talia at the time. I was like, just got my proposal shut down because your writing's too good.
I'm sure Talia was like,
she's like, I love that it made you do that, but also rough. So this is the fake boyfriend.
That story had more twists than flowers from the story.
Yeah, holy shit.
Tell your husband that I said he's a cunt.
Yeah.
So this is from the fake boyfriend fiasco, which was formerly Sweet on the Greek. And it is Nick, who, much like the dude in the Alicia Rye book, he doesn't have incel energy because he's a big slut. But he has a little bit of like naivety to him that is always fun to see in a male main character. And there's a little bit where she says to him, she swallows her painkillers dry after a massive night on the Raz, which is like the piss, which is like getting drunk for Americans.
Mm-hmm.
And
thanks for translating.
He's like, oh, where did you learn to do that? And she's like, by taking lots of drugs. And she is a aspiring tattoo artist that he falls head over tits in love at first sight with. And because he has no knowledge of how to speak to women, having been a professional football player and therefore just had easy access to sex whenever, wherever, instead of being normal, like, hi, you're pretty, would you like to hang out? Which she probably would have been open to because she's not from Australia or New Zealand. He says, would you like $100,000 to pretend to be my fake girlfriend for a week in a villa in Spain?
Oh my God.
And she says, yes, sounds good.
I'm looking for money to throw a studio.
Yeah. Why can't you wait to be on the tram? Why doesn't anyone ever just fucking do that? Anyway,
I know.
I'm very open to these kind of proposals. Like,
summer and none of this shit. So she, being a normal person, says yes. And then
in this economy,
yeah, just say no,
right? In any economy, to be fair,
yeah.
And
he spends the week just being an absolute simp for her, while she just continues to prance around in the world's most ridiculous outfit, fluffy high heels, etc. And he falls desperately in love with her, and she relents and lets him have sex with her. And it turns out he's quite good at that, and they should keep doing that. But she edges him a little bit. It's super fun. She makes, like, he gets her off, and then she's like, you can leave now. And a little bit of it's the overwhelm, but a little bit of it is also the fact that she has, like, mad trust issues. Her last boyfriend tried to murder her best friend.
Well, fuck.
So she's working through that.
Fuck.
Wait, her last boyfriend what?
tried to murder actually her used best her friend. To get
close okay. to her best friend for a murder plot he had designed.
Wow.
Which is book one.
That'll do it for the trust issue.
Yes, yeah.
That will do it. And she is just amazing. Like when their black moment comes and she overreacts for the black moment. She does. It's on her and she owns that towards the end, which I love. And I think really ties into that idea of serving cunt versus being a cunt, being where the responsibility is acknowledged as being like, oh, I could have handled that better. And he gives her, obviously, like he transfers her all the money and she, her internal dialogue is like, most, maybe other girls wouldn't take the money, but no, I am taking the money. And in fact, I should have charged more money because he's fucked me off now. And I love it. And she's just absolutely wholeheartedly herself. And he is just absolutely gone for her because of it. And she has a little bit of an issue accepting that. Not accepting that he's in love with her because who wouldn't be, but accepting that there's not an ulterior motive behind his desire for her. And I love it. And I love her. And I think a lot of Talia's indie heroines have that energy, like Cherry as well from The Princess Trap, who is amazing. And again, my poor boyfriend, because when I first read that and we were living together, but we hadn't moved to matrimony, I just stayed awake for a while and stared at him, being angry that he was not Reuben, Prince of wherever, from The Princess Trap, while he slept next to me, like a really normal, well-adjusted human being.
Staring at him, just like...
Yeah. So wait, can you remind me of the deal again? It was $100,000 in a week in Spain?
I think £100,000. Yeah, like... for a week at his friend's villa in Spain, running interference because he doesn't want people propositioning him all the time, is the deal.
Must be fucking nice. So she's
basically there, right?
Get a real problem.
Because he has no boundaries and he's too nice. So if anyone wants to have sex with him, he just does it, poor baby.
I'm wondering, like, how little it would take for me to like accept. Like, yeah, it wouldn't have to be $100,000. I mean,
maybe... I know. And so all her job is when they go to the clubs, is when other people approach him to say, no, fuck off, here's mine. And I'm like, I have done so much less for like so much more.
So much less. Oh, shit. Even the thing where it's like, look, I'll fuck you, like, I know that technically makes me a sex worker, but I don't care, like, if you're not ugly and I get to go to Spain and then I also get like the equivalent of $200,000, like, let's
I mean, like I said, I would do it for way less.
Late stage capitalism. Yeah, I was just like, to my partners, they'd be supportive, they'd be like, yeah, go on, like,
I used to have huge boobs in high school, and I had a reduction when I was 18, which then meant I had perfect. So between the huge and the perfection, just the flashing for money, absolutely. Yeah. You work with what God and surgeons gave you.
Yeah, hello. My spouse is really into erotic thrillers, and so he was watching Indecent Proposal, and he was like, well, you know what, how would you feel if, you know, this proposal, like, was offered to us? I'm like, I would hope you would support me in my choice to fuck Robert Redford.
Yeah, like, for $1 million fucking bucks. I'm already at the door. I'm not even like I'm like a wind cloud. Like, you're watching the door just close as you finish that sentence.
Like, just a whooshing noise.
Capitalism is no joke. Like, don't fuck this up for me. Let's get counselling afterwards or something. I don't know.
Yeah, don't fuck this up for us.
Yeah.
We can afford the counselling if you need it. We can go to Spain after this.
Like,
yeah. It reminds me of all of those stories you hear of guys who really push for open marriages and then or open relationships and then get so fucked off when their wives or girlfriends are having the best sex of their lives and it turns out that no one else actually wants to have sex with them.
Yeah, because they suck. Well, yeah.
It's like my favorite internet genre.
And because, like, as soon as you don't have the possibility of dangling a relationship over a woman's head, you actually have no game. Like, you have no pulling power because that's the only thing you've ever been able to offer. because of patriarchy. So like, you're bad at sex. Like, you know, then you're just gonna have to judge me on my sexual merits, and I have none. Like, you know,
or even like the very personality needed to seduce a woman into coitus with you. And like, they're like, but why? Like, what on earth?
What's in this for
why
me?
Would I?
This is like a detour. One of my my partner has a friend who's like a Kiwi, almost 40, like very good job, very good money, owns his own home, has not gotten the memo that like women don't have to marry you for a bank account anymore. Mm-hmm. Like, you being like, I will be playing rugby every Saturday and 18 holes of golf every Sunday, take it or leave it, and the ladies are, you know, unanimously leaving it, and he's just like, but either. I'm like, because you're not that good looking and you're a massive cunt. Like, you suck. I hate you. Like, what do you
Can
want
I
to
just say?
Say,
because my husband was a rugby player as well, anyone who is still playing rugby every Saturday at age 40, like, you don't want to borrow that.
No.
Like, the culture,
like,
the testosterone.
I will be cheating on you on a quarterly basis, but, you know, isn't that just not?
It's like, you should be doing yoga, you know? You should be drinking cold pressed juice. Take care of your health, you know? Going out there homoerotically, like rolling around in the mud with other men, then sinking like 18 cans of piss afterwards. Like, no one wants a piece of that.
Shower while I wait in the car for you to rock up, being like, questioning every decision that's led me to this moment. I'm so fucking
smelling
bored.
Like, ex-body spray that you all share in the locker room.
Yeah, in the locker room. And you're like, you guys are all pigs. Like, I just don't know what else to say. Like, this is just getting embarrassing. Like...
You have an amazing line about football players in your latest book, which I've forgotten the name of.
Specific, I was like, I don't remember. What is it?
What is Sherilyn Patrick's book called?
Back into it,
where you talk about the fact that footy players don't eat pussy because they say they don't like it, but really they just know they're bad.
Yeah, they're just
and
like
that's the exact vibe of anyone really still excited. Playing rugby at 40.
You're like, I'm just deeply insecure, and like, if I'm bad at it, then like, I will cry. Like, if I have to look up and see your disappointed face. We were having that conversation where it's like, now that I'm a little bit older, and there's like, oh, I'm so sorry, I feel like this is going on forever. So if you have to play up. But I was going to say, we were having a really interesting conversation, my partner and I, where I said, like, I went to a wedding and, like, a very drunk 20-year-old was like, you look 24. And I was like, ha, 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 thank you. He's like, no, seriously. And I was just like, we were discussing how it can be flattering for both genders to have young people find you attractive, or, you know, to have, like, younger people. But I think for men, the appeal is always naivete, because it's like, I don't want someone with experience, because then what if I'm shit?
They know better.
Yeah. Yes, like, what if they have standards for me and I can't manipulate them the way I want?
Because I think it's a very normal thing for both genders and all genders, of like, it's kind of a hot fantasy, like, I'll teach you what to do, like, you're eager, but you're inexperienced.
No,
like,
I can't think of anything more exhausting than teaching someone how to play. Yeah.
They're super hot. Like, what if they're really hot? If they're hot, I'm into it. But, like, I just mean, I'm not interested in you because you're bad at sex. Whereas I think for men, like, it literally is like, you can't tell me I'm shit. Like, they're constantly, they're not doing it from a place of love. They're doing it from a place of fear, which is the basis of all bad decisions. Like, you know?
And I think also sometimes there's that knowledge that they have that, in a lot of cases, younger women, if we're assuming like heterosexual pairings or like MF pairings, that girls don't necessarily have those boundaries.
No, not at all. You don't know your body.
So it's like things that maybe they haven't tried yet. They're not interested in trying necessarily, or like the older partner can be like, oh, we'll just try it. And if you don't like it, like, we don't have to do it again. But they'll push for things where older people, particularly women, will just be like, fuck off, mate, I'm not doing that.
Yeah. Or just being like, you have even the chops to just be like, oh no, or classic kick the can down the road, oh maybe, like 6 months, and then like, not very smart, like, you know what I mean, like, you don't have the intellectual strength to kind of keep wearing someone down at that age, like, you're focused on people, because you're like, object permanence isn't your strong suit, so it's like, it's that. Whereas, like, so I was watching a TikTok of some absolute fucking swine, and he was like 32 and his girlfriend was 19, and he was saying like, oh, because you can mold them.
I watched that, like, video. Yes.
I think he, because my partner was like, do you think he's like, you know, talking shit? And I was like, no, I think he's saying the quiet part out loud. I think that he's stupid, but I think a lot of men, that is what they want. Like, they want to be able to shape your personality in a way that suits them, and you are young enough that you just like, I want to show you how to dress, I want to show you how to talk to me, I want to show you how to fuck, like, I don't want you to have any opinions about that shit already, because
and I think that's one of the really concerning things when we're looking at interpersonal relationships, is that so much of that work, that environment, is set up before the prefrontal cortex is developed.
Totally, exactly. But then
and when you look at the media and TikTok and everything like that, it's really only amplifying a lot of these views that are going to cause huge issues down the road for people.
But I always said to my partner, and it's like, because this is something I'm always really interested in, the whole mistress, he's like, all girls grow up. Sad news for you cunts, like, all girls grow up. It doesn't matter how much you gaslight someone, like, women are people, and our souls, we all grow up. It might be not until you're 40 that you realize, holy shit, I fucking hate this guy, he ruined my life. But like, you are a person, you will stand on your own, like, you can never defeat us, you know what I mean? That's what I tell myself. Ooh, I'm giving myself goosebumps, but that's what I mean. Like, it's like, you know, the human spirit perseveres, like, you can all girls grow up, no matter how young to us, we all become women eventually, and we're very much your equals. We will come into our own. We will realize what a sad sack of shit you are, because, like, that's the unfortunate thing, is like, you're insecure. That's why you've done this. If you were confident, you could just, like, be a normal person, you know?
And that's, like, that's, ooh. I mean, we're all got goosebumps now. It's about the Barbie monologue. And that's, like, that's the great thing, too, is that you do see as well, you see guys growing into it. They grow out of that sort of, like, that culture that really sets them up in a poor way that we see, you know, like, so I do this unit on teen films in class when I'm teaching, and we look at the development of sex in teen films and how it's changed, and how 1999 is really a turning point, because specifically because of American Pie and the gamification of sex, because that year alone, you had She's All That, you had American Pie, you have Cruel Intentions, like, just that year alone, where we see bets around sexual activity or pacts around losing virginities and things like that. And then you see the teen sex comedy really come into its own as a subgenre, until you get to a point like Superbad, where literally the plot of that film is sexual assault. They are trying to get alcohol to get girls drunk, so that girls who they do not think will sleep with them normally will have sex with them. Yeah. That's the plot. And this got greenlit by Hollywood.
It was in the trailer. Like, you know how girls will say, like, oh, I got so shit-faced last night, I shouldn't have hooked up with that guy. We could be that mistake.
Yeah. The entire premise of it.
Also, I want to intercede that 1999 American Pie was also the death of people who were good at playing the flute, like me, and flute playing for everyone, always. Like, now that's why I'm on the podcast instead of being an internationally renowned flautist, because, yeah, every time I'm fucking playing the flute, no, fuck that. I gave it up.
Ugh. Oh, you poor thing. My sister played the clarinet, so it was a blessing for us all when she gave that up.
The flute. Like, I know everyone hates the flute, but, like, someone's gonna like the flute, and, you know,
you should pick up the flute again.
Violinist, that's who we have to blame.
I know. It's just like a real sliding doors situation.
Yeah.
That was, watch TV or movies, so I didn't even know what people were talking about, like, in 2006 when they were like, ha 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 ha, flute, and I was like, I don't know, and, you know, then I found out, and I was just like, oh.
That was the cultural impact of that film, like, cannot be denied. Like the term MILF.
Yeah.
That's where we hear it. Mm. That's like it changes the lexicon.
Mm-hmm. And that sex is something, yeah, you sort of have to goose out of women. Like it's something you kind of have to like trick people into having with you. Like it's not that
like entrapment.
Yeah, yeah. And it's like it's that funny thing too, is like men see women as holding the power of sex, but it's like, but it's your fault because you call us all sluts if we fuck you. You know what I mean? Like it's like you can't win in that regard.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. Am I
also a good heroine? Because I do think that point relates to this. I don't know.
Yeah.
Go.
All I was going to say was because I forgot to bring a third, I'm doing one of my own heroines. I'm sorry if that
Which,
seems
to
really...
be fair, we no. all agree.
What you're doing work. Right now is serving cunt. You're like, you know what? I'm going to be like, I have the cunty heroine.
Yeah, me. Me. Eve Dangerfield. But like, I would like genuinely, I was like, I know it's a conversation that we don't have very often for obvious reasons, but under patriarchy, under the system we have, being very attractive is not very helpful. Like, it is not as helpful as you think it would be. It is not as beneficial as you think it would be, because men hate what they desire and women are taught to compete against each other, that it is often a very isolating experience to be very attractive. It's an isolating experience to be sexually empowered. And I kind of wanted to write a heroine. So Ash is like a former men's magazine model, like someone who grew up in poverty and who, but I never wanted it to be like, I'm stripping to, you know, like I didn't want it to be that. It's like she did it because it was great money and also it was fun. And it was a way to have fucking fun and get out and meet people. And then, you know, fuck a bunch of football players. And then you're sort of settling down and you're trying to have a new life for yourself while refusing to apologize for ever having had that experience. And then that's the problem of like seeing yourself, because she wants to be a mother really badly. And she's just like, it's really difficult because culturally it's hard to kind of split that atom. I do think we're better now at seeing mothers as sexual beings. Like Instagram, for all its ills, has showed that there is a lot of MILFs out there. And you know, and
then, American Pie.
Yeah, exactly. Like you can continue to be hot and to dance and to be sexy and a mom. But it's like one of my things with Ash is like I just wanted to write someone that I'd never seen in a novel before, which is someone who's like kind of a bitch, but like a funny bitch. Like the way men are funny assholes. I have like throughout my books constantly, I always, one of my examples is like Jake from Brooklyn Nine-Nine. Women never get to play that character, which is like, I am a huge burden on everyone around me, but isn't it kind of funny? Like, you know what I mean? You have
and
to
I
be
adorable.
Yeah, and you're like, it's like, don't I make up for it? But like how hilarious I am. Women always have to be very competent and they have to be very... And I was like, I don't think that women are very easily able to do either of those things because it's fucking boring and super hard. So it's like, I wanted someone who's like a kind of a bitch. And it's kind of like, you're wasting my fucking time. And Dean, this very innocent guy, which is like, I really like you, but you're so fucking useless. Like, why are you so useless? Why do you like this? It's very like, because he's like constantly unemployed and has no money and is just like kind of treading water until someone shows him what to do, which I think is something a lot of men do. They're just
yes.
So I read Open Heart in, I think in 2017. Like I read it was very early in my Eve Dangerfield journey. My first one was Locked Box, top tier, read it, but not my favorite, which is Something Borrowed. And what I loved about it was, firstly, we're pointing out, Ash is also in the medical industry.
Yes, she's new.
But what you're saying about like the idea of sexuality, the other thing is that Ash was very much planning on being a single mother.
Yes, she is.
And there's that real, I do think we still have quite a strong stigma around the relationship between like sexually confident and unapologetic women and like single mothers.
Mm-hmm.
There can be a real, like a really negative connotation there, which is completely undeserved because being a parent in a two-part, like parent household, like I couldn't do that shit if my life depended on it.
Mm-hmm.
And what I love about Ash is that she is just like, you know what, you're real cute, honey, but it's, you're just, I don't need this shit. I don't need to be taking care of you.
Mm-hmm.
And he is so gone for her that he's like, he doesn't, he's like, Dean is the sweetest. There's nothing toxic about Dean. He is a giant ginger teddy bear of a man. Yes. And his solution to being told no is,
okay, a try hard.
Because I'm useless. How do I get less useless?
Yeah.
You know, he respects what she's saying. He's not like, he doesn't push for it again because, like, without making any kind of change, because that's toxic. You know, you've been told no, fuck off. So he does fuck off. But while he's fucking off, he does the work that he hopes will help her see him in the light that he wants to be seen in.
He does the Darcy.
Right, yeah, exactly.
He does the Darcy.
The work.
And in his case, it's like learning how to make, like, fucking chili con carne or something.
Yeah, yeah, something with beans in it. Yeah, it's like, just open two cans, bro. It's not that hard. But I think,
yeah,
like even at
the
age
anymore.
Of 24, when I wrote it, like, no, like, I'd already kind of realized, like, men's solution to being women, when presented with a problem, by and large, will be like, how do I fix this problem? Whereas, unfortunately, there's, like, I didn't know this, but I learned it later, is, like, learned helplessness in men is, like, a tendency to be like, I've tried whining, and I'm all out of ideas. Like, you know, and that's really hard as a woman, because even if men would come up and be like, oh, can you help me with this? And I'd be like, no, I can't. I don't know what I'm doing, because, you know, that gets people to leave you alone. But, like, they would just, like, go and find another woman to do this very thing. And
My favorite is, can you call the dentist to make an appointment for me? I'm like, absolutely fucking not.
Oh, sorry, did it freeze?
You were kind of cutting out a little bit.
Oh, no. Are we back?
Yeah, you're good.
Yes.
Okay. It's just, you know, it's unfortunate that we don't encourage men to solve problems for some weird reason. I don't know why, but it's like, I wanted a hero where it's like, all you have to do is try. I think women are constantly telling men what they want, and men are constantly hearing, I should do steroids, instead of, like, what we're actually saying, which is, like, I just want you to try a little bit harder to be nice to me and, like, help around the house or, like, be better at fucking.
And they're like, but if I don't have a Bugatti... And if I'm not taking, like, 1,000 supplements, I mean, that's what girls want. And, like, never in the history of the fucking world has a girl. I would rather have a dude who drives a Bugatti than someone who does the fucking dishes.
Yeah, exactly. Like, again, if I'm not repping creatine 24 hours a day, 7 days a week, no bitches will fuck me. And I'm like, I just don't know where you're getting the evidence.
No, this is not incorrect.
My kids were talking about it in class, so, like, 16, 17-year-old boys. And they're like, oh, I'm talking to this girl. Because, like, the amount of knowledge I have about these guys and their love lives and or that lack thereof is out of control. Monday morning, that's all I'm hearing is strategizing. And so I'm like, and they're like, oh, what do I say? Like, what do I message her? Like, what, I send a snap? Like, what do you think I should say? And they're asking someone else who has, like, as much fucking experience as them, which is none. And I'm like, why don't you ask her how her weekend is? And they're like, fuck, miss, that's so lame. And I'm like,
I gotta make her feel like shit and, like, question whether I either, like, even see her as a person.
I guarantee that I have made out with hotter girls than you using these techniques.
These simple techniques.
Have you tried eye contact?
Treating her like a human being.
Yeah. What are you gonna if you're not gonna ask someone how their weekend is, what are you gonna say to them? Like, it's always, I forget who it was, but a feminist was saying that about, like, male, like, dating profiles. Is like, it's really difficult because, like, most men are trying to simultaneously be like, be interested in me, but fuck off. Like, you know, like, their photos are low effort and they're basically like, no bitches, no drugs. Like, they're, what they're projecting is, I already kind of hate you. And
yes,
you're just like,
yeah.
It's just because, like, men are
any woman who's on dating sites is desperate for dick, but they're also on the same site, but they're not desperate.
Yeah, the mentality of, like, a man being like, well, what do you bring to the table? What do you bring to the table?
The table.
Only table in your house is a folding table.
You have no headboard, sir.
And, like, why are you holding the camera so close to your fucking face? You look like a nutcase. Like, I don't want to know what your nostrils look like. Not relevant. Like, even, like, guys who I really like, who I thought, like, were sensible, you look at their profiles and you're like, You, Lachlan, you look like a fucking nutcase. Like, if you came up on my thing, I'd be like, this guy is, like, making me tired just looking at his profile. Like,
in Love Hard, where she looks at his original dating profile and he's just, like, wearing plaid and holding an axe. He looks like a fucking serial murderer. Because he's trying to give off, like, an outdoorsy aesthetic.
Oh, my God. Although, to be fair, I hate the guys that are, like, holding babies and shit, too. Where you're just like...
Puppies
are the only safe option. I don't want a man holding a fish. I don't want a man holding a child. I want a puppy.
Yeah, even then, like, or cats and stuff. I'm like,
no, not a cat. No, Jesus, no.
Meg, are you thinking about that time that I took Deanna's phone?
Yes. Or the time that Molly would go through and, like, rank the size of the fish that they were holding.
Yeah, I took our friend Deanna's phone once, and I was just like, I got married before dating apps were a thing. So I'm like, what is this? And I'm looking at the profiles, and I'm like,
you said I volunteer?
Because I just feel like that man is actually a bad person.
Yeah, my dick to strangers. Weekend. That's how I volunteered. Yeah.
I've been like, yeah, my husband and I, we've been together maybe 13 years now. And so again, before dating apps, so I'm like, fucking three wines Courtney loves nothing more than indiscriminate swiping on someone else's phone. I am judgmental as fuck. I'm like, no, no, yes, no, yes. First impressions only, baby.
Oh, you guys, this went off the rails and I love it.
It's so good. All right, so thank you both so much for sharing your cuntiness with the world. We will put everyone's links in the show notes. Do you want to say them now? Do you remember them? We never remember ours, so we never say them. No. Courtney's shaking her head though. No, we will post
Courtney Clark Michaels, that's me, wherever I am.
We'll post them. Thank you to the Zoom gods for letting us actually be able to record this. And we'll also like list the books that were mentioned in the show notes. So until next time, air kisses.
Thank you.